NBC Monitor News on the Hour, brought to you by AT&T, the people who run your anything, anytime, anywhere network. Here is William Littauer.
There are predictions of economic warfare today in the wake of President de Gaulle's decision not to devalue the French franc. Faced with a worldwide crisis of confidence in the stability of the French economy and the money it supports, de Gaulle was widely expected to devalue by about 10%, bringing the value of the franc down from about 20 American cents to 18 cents, and more into parity with the West German mark. The 10 major capitalist nations agreed last week on a plan to extend nearly $3 billion in loans and credits to France to help bolster confidence in the franc and stem speculation in gold trading. West Germany's central bank president Karl Blessing indicates the meeting in Bonn last week did not end with agreement for devaluation of the franc, but other sources indicate it was widely expected. Blessing declared there was agreement the mark would not be revalued upward. The first semi-official comment in Washington is that the Bonn arrangement still stands. Revaluation and devaluation are politically undesirable. Revaluation tends to restrain prices and costs, leading to possible economic slowdown. Devaluation, on the other hand, tends to induce inflation. De Gaulle is said to be too proud to allow West Germany to force him into devaluation and may be trying to force West Germany to revalue. But financiers expect some sort of backdoor French devaluation, measures that would have a similar effect, such as tough exchange controls to keep francs in France, tighter credit and reduce government spending to hold down inflation, and higher import taxes to correct the French balance of payments deficit. There has been no official reaction in Washington to de Gaulle's announcement today. British reaction and more news after this for AT&T.
I reckon the first thing I noticed about your face...
Sterling Moss, the world-famous racing car driver.
You know, no matter how many numbers you've got to dial, your telephone system doesn't often foul them up. There's no waiting for hours to get a call through and then finish up with the wrong number anyway. You get the right one at the first go. From my point of view, that's pretty unusual. I wonder if you Yanks realize just how lucky you are.
It isn't so much our telephones, Mr. Moss. It's our telephone network that makes the difference. The most extraordinary communication system in the world. It can take your call and, in a wink, switch it to any one of 102 million other telephone devices. On our nationwide network, anything goes. People talk, computer talk, pictures and drawings, anything. Instantly. Anytime, anywhere.
You're anywhere, anything, anytime network. AT&T.
Once again, William Littauer.
Britain had already moved to improve its balance of payments problem in anticipation of a French devaluation before today's announcement by de Gaulle. A report on British reaction to the announcement from David Weber, NBC News, London.
The British are just as flabbergasted as anyone else that General de Gaulle has refused to devalue the franc. But they're mixed on the logical follow-up question of how this will affect the pound sterling. As far as we know, the foreign exchange will open on schedule on Monday morning here in London. And by and large, the financial experts here think that the pound won't suffer too much. It has, after all, been put back in good standing as far as the world's money traders are concerned by yesterday's new austerity measures. Here in Britain, as elsewhere, the speculation was all on how much the franc would be devalued. No one even raised the possibility that it would not be devalued. In fact, the impression here was that de Gaulle was offered the $2 billion standby credit only if he devalued. Having refused, it's seen here as a move to put the pressure on the Germans once again to revalue the mark. David Weber, NBC News, London.
President Johnson disclosed today he is considering entering a hospital for x-rays of his intestinal disorder, diverticulosis. The ailment is one of long standing with the president. White House physicians indicate there is no alarm. An American pilot was reported captured by North Vietnamese forces, the first American pilot to be shot down over the North since the bombing halt took effect November 1st. He was on a reconnaissance mission. In Saigon, the U.S. command continues to report violations of the demilitarized zone by communist forces. In Paris, Chief North Vietnamese Peace Talks advisor Lê Duc Tho accuses the United States of fabricating the incidents and warns the peace talks must resume soon or the communists will pursue the war to final victory. The National Communicable Disease Center in Atlanta reports flu or flu-like illnesses have spread to 7 states and Puerto Rico. Some of the disease is the Hong Kong strain of Asian flu. Colorado appears hardest hit, with a total of 100,000 cases expected during the epidemic. Once again, the hour's top story, France refuses to devalue the franc, but it appears the bond plan developed last week to restore confidence in the franc will not be endangered. William Littauer, NBC News, Washington.
Listen again on the hour for NBC Monitor News. This is Monitor, vintage 68. And here are the sounds of our times, the name of the group, with a little instant pyromania. Light my fire. Morgan here for Monitor 68 with music by Michelle Lee. Inspired, probably, by guests who don't drink. Title, Knowing When to Leave.
Knowing when to leave may be the smartest thing that anyone can learn. Go. I'm afraid my heart.
That no one can tell their wishes and makes believe. the nuclear submarine Skate groped its way under the Arctic ice cap, its commander was James Calvert. Today, Admiral Calvert is the superintendent of the U.S. Naval Academy at Annapolis. Life magazine goes below the surface of the energetic and thoughtful commander of the midshipmen. In a close-up, a submariner rises to Annapolis. Admiral Calvert gives life his views on education, dissent, the changing role of the military, and his own job at the Naval Academy, where excellence is considered its own reward. Reporting another kind of excellence, Life cameras focus on three athletes from Kenya, medal winners in the 1968 Olympics. The homecoming of Olympic heroes in Life this week. Life magazine, working to bring you a world of information, insight, and ideas. Life.
The original meaning of Thanksgiving, the giving of thanks, is sometimes forgotten. But many people still pause to reflect on the things for which they can be thankful. One such man is Carl Stokes, the first Negro mayor of Cleveland, Ohio.
I'm thankful that this Thanksgiving will find most Clevelanders and most Americans amply fed, well-clothed, and well-housed. Now, I am distressed, of course, that almost 20% of our American people will not. But on the other hand, I'm thankful that George Wallace and his creed were dramatically rejected by over 84% of our Americans in this last election. In that same election, I have reason to be thankful that my brother earned his own place in history by being the first Negro ever elected to the United States Congress from Ohio. It has been a good year here in Cleveland, everything considered, and I am sincerely grateful that we have been able to put together a young, imaginative, dedicated administration, and that we have succeeded, or at least have begun to succeed, in moving this city ahead in a number of respects. Clevelanders have a better and a more optimistic outlook. More of them feel that government can be and is being responsive to their needs. We have been able to improve services. We have new equipment, police cars, tow trucks, snow plows, the things so important to people in their day-to-day lives. And I personally have been given a unique opportunity at a historic moment in this country's history to participate in the drama of the urban crisis.
Mayor Carl Stokes of Cleveland on the meaning of Thanksgiving to him.
So if you could make a long-distance call to a zoo and take advantage of the new low interstate rates on Saturday, which animal would you call?
An elephant.
You'd call an elephant?
Sure.
Is there anything in particular you'd say to him?
I could say, the Hollister elephant, I know it's ridiculous talking to you, but I get a cheap rate.
Long distance is the next best thing to be.
On Saturday.
On Saturday.
The cheapest distance.
The cheapest distance.
Between two points.
Between two points.
The long distance line.
The long distance line.
The bell system.
The bell system.
This is Monitor 68, a good companion to take along if you're driving somewhere. Or just sit around the house with. More ahead, so stay with us. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
All you need is just one break. If you are an employer or personnel manager, you can use the services of Just One Break Incorporated, the unique, no-fee, non-profit agency whose professional staff will help you fill your job openings with competent, qualified, handicapped workers. For details, write to JOB Incorporated, 717 First Avenue, or call 986-0044. The handicapped worker cares about his job. On WNBC Radio 66, the first thing is the big thing. Make it your thing with me, Big Wilson, 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. Weekdays right here on WNBC Radio, the everyone thing.
WNBC Radio 66, New York.
For Monitor 68, this is Henry Morgan with a message from the American Diabetes Association. Overweight, over 40, and related to a diabetic. Does anyone you know fit this description? That's the sort of person who's the most likely target for diabetes. There are more than 1,600,000 people in this country who have diabetes and they don't know it. Be alert. Be tested for diabetes this week, Diabetes Week. Call your doctor, your diabetes association, or medical society about a test for yourself and your family. Do it this week. Jerry Vale with his latest, Where Are They Now?
As my life passes by me, all the things I've ever loved have gone away. And my visions of a new tomorrow fade into a dream of yesterday. As my life passes by me, I can hear my memory crying out the truth, that the only joys remembered are the ones that were surrendered to my youth.
I hadn't had a date since August, and not a single likely prospect in sight. My stardust was all turning into sawdust, but then I discovered Ultra Bright. Ultra Bright entered my life. Wow! Ultra Bright changed my whole life. Now, suddenly I'm popular, the belle of the ball. My phone just won't stop ringing, but I don't mind at all. Hello, George and Jim and Frank, believe me, it's for real. New Ultra Bright gives your mouth sex appeal.
New Ultra Bright toothpaste, the kickiest taste, the freshest bread, the brightest teeth. That's sex appeal.
New Ultra Bright toothpaste, a taste you can really feel. New Ultra Bright gives your mouth sex appeal.
After Ultra Bright, everything else is just toothpaste.
This week on the Pacific Coast, another college was shut down because of unrest on campus. The cause was said to be, among other things, a battle over civil rights. This week, a Monitor College poll will explore the whole subject of prejudice and bias on campus. How do the students feel about it? Here with the poll's results is Bill Ryan, NBC News.
Despite what everybody thinks, most students do not believe there is much bias and prejudice on the campus. When the college poll asked the students on nearly 100 university campuses this question, how are Negroes treated on your campus? 8 out of 10 felt that black students were treated as well as, or at least no differently than other students. Only 1 out of 10 students feels that Negroes or other minority groups are treated badly. A typical comment is that of a Wisconsin co-ed who says, I think that students bend over backwards to make the Negro feel accepted and welcome. Or, as a Stanford junior says, we don't go overboard or out of our way. As a matter of fact, I don't think that most Negro students would like that. We try to act natural and accept the students for what they are. Well, comments such as these are typical and show that a broader atmosphere of acceptance of Negroes is taking place on American campuses. As more and more Negroes are being admitted to college, the students are becoming more accustomed to classes and social activities with Negroes and other minority groups. As one Ohio University junior stated, I came from a high school which was predominantly Negro, and I find less prejudice on this campus than I did in high school. It is also interesting to note that the longer a student is in college, the more tolerant he becomes and the more he accepts people of other races in his everyday life. The whole atmosphere seems to be summed up by a Syracuse freshman who says, I don't say that prejudice doesn't exist, but for the most part it is disappearing and every year it gets better. On balance, if we take the students' own opinions and can accept their attitudes at face value, better race relations may indeed be only a generation away. Bill Ryan, NBC News.
More music on Monitor, this one by The Lettermen, a song about Mary's rainbow.
Along the avenues of my memory, a thousand pictures hang along the way. And each new turn I take provides a fascination in dreams of a forgotten yesterday. I walk along and see Mary's rainbow hanging there in my memory, so I stop and stare a while. But then I see the rainbow is fading, the colors hiding visions of her smile. And I call her name. Let's try again. Soon the rainbow will disappear and the new rainbow will appear again. Once we could touch the gold in the sunset, life was such a
is, look for the man who has the clear, distinctive bottle of Miller High Life. He knows.
Miller makes it right. Miller makes it right.
Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee.
Next, Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola. A look at the changing attitude of today's young men toward the sacrifices required of potential football players. Brought to you by Associates Finance Companies. Here's Joe.
Recently in the Washington Post, an article appeared under the headline, Football Losing Attraction for Youth. Actually, I think the headline was a little strong, but the story under it carried some interesting thoughts on the subject of football and our young people. In the article, writer Richard Both points out some changes that are taking place among college kids. For example, Ohio's Oberlin College, where more than 75 young men used to turn out for football each year, found that this year there were only 41. And 15 of them were freshmen. In Maine, Colby College had to combine the varsity and freshmen and still wound up with only 44 players, more than half of whom were freshmen. The changes are apparent not only at the college level, but in some prep schools, too. A spokesman for Milton Academy in Massachusetts is quoted as saying, "We still have a nucleus of boys who really want to go out for the old traditional sports, but there is a lessening of the intense approach to sports. The youngsters have many more interests, and they're doing a lot more thinking." The article makes a point that I'd like to mention. It says, where once every scrappy young 150-pounder willingly banged himself senseless on the gridiron, today's comfortable youths are deciding in significant numbers that the old rah-rah spirit no longer makes sense. My feeling is that today's young men are interested in sports just as the kids of a generation ago or 10 generations ago. But I also feel that there's a definite reason why some youngsters are showing a resistance to football. It's not that they don't like the game. I'd have to doubt seriously if football has ever been more popular than it is right now. However, it is becoming more and more time-consuming for the young men who play it. And some of today's younger people resent giving up all that time. At an age where football should still be fun, kids are practicing every day after class and then studying football plays at night. In the spring, when they feel like playing baseball, there's more football practice. In the summers, when they want to go to vacations, coaches are checking to see that the boys are working out to stay in shape. It all calls for a sacrifice that a lot of boys don't want to make. Is football worth it? That's a decision each youngster must make on his own. I believe that most kids feel that it is. But I also believe that other kids are entitled to feel that it isn't. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports. And now this for the associates. Nobody wants to worry about financial problems during the holidays, right? So if you've got money worries, why not see the folks at Associates Finance? Chances are, they can come up with the money you need for any good purpose. And they'll arrange monthly payments that suit your budget. There's an Associates Finance office near you. So why not stop in and leave your money worries there? Associates, nice people with money to loan you.
English. Horse Jankowski, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. This is Monitor 68, heard border to border, coast to coast, possibly even elsewhere. In the beautiful Summit area of Bluefield, West Virginia, we're caught on WHIS. We'll pause for station identification, then we'll resume.
Join host Donald Voorhees for encores from the telephone hour tomorrow night on most of these NBC stations.
The name of the game is Fortune Phone. And you could be a winner. Learn how on WNBC Radio 66, New York.
Where are you going, Liza?
Don't bother me, Glenn. I'm late.
I'm meeting my mom for dinner at Wetson's.
What do you have to eat?
We're going to have Wetson's Southern Fried Chicken.
I love Wetson's Southern Fried Chicken.
And some Wetson's hamburgers.
I love Wetson's hamburgers, too.
And some strawberry Wetson's thick shakes.
Wetson's thick shakes are wonderful.
And some fish and chips.
You wouldn't put me on, would you?
Look, Glenn, I don't have time to stand here and talk to you. I have to go.
Liza!
What?
Guess who's coming to dinner?
In Stamford, Connecticut, there's a Wetson's on Hope Street near Colonial Road. In Brooklyn, New York, a Wetson's is located on Flatbush Avenue and Avenue U. For the Wetson's nearest you, check the phone book.
This is Jim Iyer, WNBC News. It's 5:30, 47 degrees in New York and mostly cloudy. State officials announced late today that more than 5,000 or 10% of the patients at state mental hospitals have been transferred or sent home. This because of work stoppages or threatened walkouts. Negotiations are continuing in Manhattan at this hour, but talks are reported to be deadlocked. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees is demanding that Governor Rockefeller call an election so that 124,000 non-professional employees can choose union representation. Employees at three New York City mental hospitals have already walked off their jobs, and the union threatens more walkouts at upstate hospitals next week if their demand is not met. Long Island Railroad commuters will apparently be faced with train delays and schedule mix-ups Monday morning. A new timetable goes into effect Monday morning, providing for major scheduling changes for the first time in 20 years. Officials of the Brotherhood of Railroad Trainmen are upset because they say the union was neither consulted nor notified of the change. One union official pointed out today that the trainmen will be operating on the old timetable and the commuters on the new one. In college football this afternoon, Harvard gained a fantastic tie with Yale. 29-29 is the final to leave the two schools tied for the Ivy League and Big Three titles. Harvard scored twice in the final 42 seconds of the game. Other final scores, Lehigh 21, Lafayette 6, Rutgers 55, Colgate 34, Purdue over Indiana by a slim margin, 38-35, Columbia 46, Brown 20, Delaware 38, Bucknell 12. The forecast, mostly cloudy tonight and Sunday morning, low in the mid-40s, partly sunny and mild on Sunday with a high in the upper 50s. It's 47 degrees in New York and mostly cloudy. This is Jim Iyer, WNBC News. Now back to Monitor.
Hey, look at us now. We got the winners in town. Lincoln Mercury leads the way.
Lincoln Mercury leads the way for 1969 with a beautiful new Cougar, redesigned from head to tail, with even more European elegance this year.
Lincoln Mercury leads the way.
Cougar is bigger and more powerful for 69. Our big new cat has a more powerful 351 cubic inch V8. And now, for the first time, Cougar's wild excitement comes in a brand new Cougar convertible.
Lincoln Mercury leads the way.
Cougar, with flip-lid eyes, flashing tail, stick shift. Drive a real winner. 69 Cougar.
See, Cougar, it's clear we're a winner this year. Lincoln Mercury leads the way. Come on, now talk it to me, sing me a song. Let's keep the music groovy, we're going strong. Come on, Leader.
Off we go again with more of Monitor. Morgan at the microphone. Just ahead, our aisle man, Leonard Probst, will review the latest contribution to the nude school of the contemporary theater. A play with a cast of two and a costume total of zero.
You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
Alice's Restaurant, the new Christy Minstrels. Incidentally, whatever happened to the old Christy Minstrels?
America's a country of heroes. But how about these? Joseph Sank, Benjamin Banneker, Crispus Attucks. You probably never heard of them. They were Negroes. And our history books have often failed to explore the important part Negroes played in American history. Life magazine this week begins a four-part report on Negro history, The Search for a Black Past. Part one of the Life series is a 17-page portfolio on the period from the Revolution to the Civil War. And as usual, Life keeps its eye on today. There's a story on a West German millionaire accused of spying for communist East Germany, and a revealing report on a theater critic who took off all his clothes while watching a play because he thought it was expected. The expected, the unexpected, the unexplored. All in Life this week. All in the magazine that works to bring you a world of information, insight, and ideas.
I hope their Broadway theater is better than they used to. The performers are going to need it if what our critic, Leonard Probst, says is true about a play that opened this week.
When there are only two people on stage and they both remove all their clothes, that's about as nude as a play can get. And that's what happens in the newest and nudest play to open in New York. It's called Sweet Arrows by Terrence McNally, and it's one half of a double bill that opened Thursday night in an off-Broadway theater. The trouble with Sweet Arrows is that it's a bad play. The lesson I learned while watching it is that even a bad play cannot be covered up by a lack of clothing. The story, incidentally, is about a man who captures a young girl, ties and gags her, then takes off her clothes while he carries on a dull, boring, 50-minute monologue. It's fairly obvious that nudity is the new trend in the theater, and the theater is merely catching up with what's been going on in painting, the movies, magazines, and even in the advertisements. Why is there so much nudity? First, it's there for shock value, for sensationalism, and for voyeuristic pleasure. But that's not a sufficient explanation. More than that, it's one way that writers and performers are saying, this is the bare truth. This is a protest against the old values, the false values. Another reason is that it's now permissible. The law has changed, and the law does reflect the society. The big themes that used to be the center of so much drama are now too big to have meaning. Man now feels the world can get along without him, that it is only man's conceit that makes him want to fly to the moon, that machines have taken over, and they could make the lunar trip without him. One way to make drama meaningful is to be concerned with man in the minutest detail, with his body and his dreams. They are, after all, the last refuge from the machine. This is Leonard Probe from Monitor.
Of course, there's another lesson there, I think. Maybe that if you don't know how to write a play, just write a belly button. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
Hi, my name is Charlie Brown. I'm here on WNBC Radio 66, weekdays from 3 until 7 p.m. If you dig talent and personality, hip music, the latest weather and traffic reports, join me while I listen to the Big Wilson Show every morning. WNBC Radio 66, New York.
I'm a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire, I can hear you through the wine. Tall lineman,
Ohio State wins Rose Bowl berth. Harvard and Yale share Ivy League title. Frank Messer will have the stories behind those headlines, plus all the latest scores next up on Monitor. Brought to you by State Farm Fire and Casualty, the world's largest homeowners insurance company.
Hi, I'm Phil Foster. The other day, I invited my brother-in-law, Kevin, over to see my new pop-art painting by Picasso. He said, Phil, that's nothing but a great big red and white State Farm bumper sticker. What's it supposed to mean? I'll tell you, Kevin, I says, that big sticker means that my house and everything in it is protected by State Farm Fire and Casualty in case of fire, storm, burglars. It can even protect me in the event of a liability lawsuit. And it also means that I save money because State Farm, the world's biggest home insurer, is famous for low rates. Kevin took a real close look at the painting. Well, he said, I must admit that it does reveal a perfect relationship of color value, composition unity, and polychromatic technique. It could only have been done by Picasso. Right, Kevin, I said. Ralph Picasso, my State Farm agent.
For your home, your car, your life, and your health. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
At the Monitor Sports Desk now, Frank Messer.
Thanks, Henry. This was the final full Saturday of college football for 1968, and it was a big one. Ohio State clinched the Big Ten title, and Harvard and Yale deadlocked in what has to be the most dramatic of all of the games in the long series to share the Ivy League crown. At Columbus, before a record crowd of better than 85,000, second-ranked Ohio State, led by junior fullback Jim Otis's four touchdowns, crushed fourth-ranked Michigan 50-14 to assure itself of a Rose Bowl berth against top-rated Southern California, which is playing crosstown rival UCLA at the moment. At Cambridge, in a battle of unbeatens, Harvard rallied from a 22-6 halftime deficit to tie Yale 29-29. The drama really unfolded in the last minute. With 42 seconds to play, Harvard's second-string quarterback Frank Champy, in other games involving the top 10, seventh-ranked Kansas tripped Missouri 21-19. That assures the Jayhawks of at least a tie for the Big 8 title. Eighth-ranked Tennessee trounced Kentucky 24-7. Ninth-ranked Arkansas stayed alive in the Southwestern Conference race by turning back Texas Tech 42-7. And now let's run them by sections. In the East, West Virginia upset Syracuse 23-6. Moravian 47, Muhlenberg 15, Holy Cross 27, Connecticut 24. Penn beat Dartmouth 26-21 and handed the Hanover Indians their first losing season since 1955. Princeton 41, Cornell 13, Boston College 21, Massachusetts 6, Buffalo 13, Boston University 10, Delaware 38, Bucknell 12, Columbia 46, Brown 20, Johns Hopkins 46, Western Maryland 23, Rutgers 55, Colgate 34, Lehigh 21, Lafayette 6. In the South, South Carolina nipped Clemson 7-3, Virginia 28, Maryland 23, East Carolina 23, the Citadel 14, Florida State 42, Wake Forest 24, Chattanooga 40, Samford 7. North Carolina 25, Duke 14, Texas Christian 24, Rice 14. In the Midwest, Cincinnati 23, Miami of Ohio 21, Bowling Green 44, Xavier of Ohio 14, Purdue 38, Indiana 35 in the battle for the old oaken bucket, Michigan State 31, Northwestern 14, Iowa 37, Illinois 13, Minnesota 23, Wisconsin 15, Kansas State 21, Oklahoma State 14. On the turf, 25-year-old Penny Ann Early, frustrated again today at Churchill Downs in her bid to become the first woman jockey at a major thoroughbred track, turned from the saddle to pro basketball. The pretty divorcee signed to play with the Kentucky Colonels of the American Basketball Association, and she's expected to play next Wednesday night. Elsewhere in the ABA, the Houston Post says that Slater Martin, coach and general manager of the Houston Mavericks, will resign next Wednesday night. And finally, from the How to Win Friends and Influence People Department, this item. On December 10th, Joe Frazier defends his version of the world heavyweight boxing title against Argentina's Oscar Ringo Bonavena. Today, Bonavena flew into Philadelphia from Buenos Aires and promptly announced that Frazier is stupid, crazy, and dumb for fighting him. That's the late sports news, Henry. This is Frank Messer for Monitor Sports.
Miss June Francis, internationally distinguished fashion designer. Miss Francis, what ideas are you thinking about?
I'm deciding on what to serve at a dinner party I'm giving for some European designer friends.
Have you decided on a wine yet?
Virginia Dare. Several of my French friends have said they think it's as good as the best of their wines.
Fashion designer June Francis, another interesting person who chooses Virginia Dare wine. Produced by the Virginia Dare Wine Company, Canandaigua, New York.
Now, music by Hugo and Luigi. Here they are with the title song of a musical for which they wrote the music, incidentally. Maggie Flynn.
The President-elect of the United States will be spending the Thanksgiving holiday with his family and looking forward to the future. Here with that story is NBC newsman Herb Kaplow.
The Nixon Thanksgiving is to be a private family matter. The President-elect and his family expecting to spend it in their apartment overlooking New York Central Park. There are at least two elements that will make this a somewhat different Thanksgiving for the Nixons. The sobering thought that in less than 2 months, Richard Nixon is to assume the enormous responsibilities of the presidency. The second element is the coming marriage of 20-year-old Julie Nixon to 21-year-old David Eisenhower. The wedding is set for December 22nd in New York. The couple will resume their studies, Miss Nixon at Smith College, David Eisenhower at Amherst. While the broad plans of their wedding have been set, it's likely the Nixons will be giving that subject some thought on this Thanksgiving Day. Herbert Kaplow, NBC News at Nixon headquarters in New York.
Conte and Teicher, two pianos, no waiting, and A Man Without Love. Program note, later on monitor with Ted Steele as your host, Vice Pres Humphrey talks about Thanksgiving, singer Carmen McRae will explain how she works with nightclub audiences. There'll be an interview with Petula Clark on the London set of the movie Goodbye, Mr. Chips, and a visit from the young lady who models the play... very upsetting, she's the centerfold in Playboy. Well, be sure to listen later on monitor.
The more we hear, the more we learn. To keep well informed is a major concern. So listen for things that are happening on NBC.
This is Del Sharpett calling your dollar bill for the mentally retarded. Association for CRMD needs your support to help mentally retarded children and adults. This association has been working for the mentally retarded for almost 20 years. It offers them hope for a better future through job training, social programs, recreational activities throughout our community. Send your contribution today to Association for CRMD, 114 West 30th Street, New York, New York, 10001.
When you play Fortune Phone, you can be a loser and love it. Because WNBC's Lucky Fortune Phone losers get a second chance to win. This is Big Wilson. Every weekday morning between 5 and 9, I announce the name of a Fortune Phone loser. If that lucky loser calls me within 5 minutes, he wins $50. Fortune Phone losers are winners when they listen to Big Wilson mornings on WNBC Radio 66.
Up, up, and on your way with Big Wilson and the traffic reports. 5 to 9 a.m. weekdays on WNBC Radio 66, New York.